This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
Hi, everyone here and around the world. Tonight, I'll continue my last week's dive into the mysterious UFO metals of bismuth layered with magnesium and pure aluminum pieces allegedly containing atomically placed iridium atoms, all allegedly from a crashed UFO near the Trinity site at White Sands, New Mexico in the late 1940s. The source was a U.S. Army sergeant who said that his grandfather worked military security at a UFO crash not far from the World War II Trinity site of the first atomic bomb test west of Roswell. Not the famous July 8, 1947 UFO crash site between Roswell and Corona. Military and aerospace whistleblowers say the U.S. government has been monitoring UFOs and trying to back-engineer advanced UFO technologies since World War II. But Pentagon forces have always denied it has secret underground back-engineering efforts after UFOs are retrieved from crashes. Physicist Stanton Friedman told me that experiments in New Mexico with concentrated beams of microwaves aimed at some UFOs brought those few UFOs down. And when I investigated and reported about UFOs on the nationally syndicated radio programs Dreamland and Coast to Coast AM, hosted by Art Bell in the 1990s, the name Dreamland was slang used at Nellis Air Force Range in Nevada to describe the top secret Area 51 at the center of this map that includes Groom Lake, the Papoose Mountain Range, and the Nevada Test Site northwest of Indian Springs next to the Nellis Air Force Range. Colonel Corso is not the only military officer to say that highly classified technology and craft have been stored and tested above and below ground on those federal lands in southern Nevada for decades. Some insiders even say that extraterrestrial craft are still hidden behind and below the Papoose Mountain Range at the center of this map. Back engineering extraterrestrial technology for American military and commercial development was well known to U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso, here on the right, receiving a Bronze Star in Rome in 1945. He was former chief of the Army's Foreign Technology Division from January 20, 1953 to January 20, 1961, when General Dwight Eisenhower was president. In the day after Roswell, his 1997 groundbreaking and best-selling book, Colonel Corso described his assignment in 1961 to 63, working for General Arthur Trudeau and President Dwight Eisenhower, quote, "To get extraterrestrial," and the word was used, "technology out of Pentagon storage into the hands of defense contractors," close quote. Colonel Corso also asserted that the alien intelligences were not all benevolent. Colonel Corso said that some non-humans, quote, "were genetically altered humanoid automatons, cloned biological entities that were harvesting biological specimens on this planet Earth for their own experimentation," close quote. Meanwhile, there were also rumors that other ETs were allegedly trying to help humans. This is what Colonel Corso wrote about hand-imprinted panels retrieved from a crescent-shaped extraterrestrial vehicle that crashed in New Mexico. Quote, "The series of raised deck panels were indentations for the creature's hands. the indentations on these panels, as the Roswell field reports describe them, looked like the handprints pressed into the concrete at the old Grauman's Chinese Theater in Hollywood. Were the directional commands a series of electronic instructions transmitted directly from the creatures' brains along their bodies and through the panels into the ship itself, as if the ship were only an extension of the creature's body? Close quote, by Lieutenant Colonel Philip Porso in his book. So which ETs use these UFO control panels with depressions of six-fingered hand imprints? Allegedly, these panels were found with two six-fingered humanoids in a UFO recovery operation at another crash site southwest of Socorro, New Mexico, between May 31st to June 2nd of 1947, which was not the July 8th, 1947 historically famous crash that made the front page of the Roswell Daily Record and around the world. Quote, Roswell Army Airfield captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region, close quote. So when these odd medals arrived in Art Bell's mailbox in April of 1996 with a typed letter, Art photographed them and called me to investigate. Unfortunately, the South Carolina source never gave a definite date for the UFO crash. Where these six-fingered hands were imprinted on the craft's control panel and implied the aluminum pieces might be from such a panel. Part of the problem is that government efforts to deliberately suppress or mix up dates have been a good way to cover up history with confusion. I called Alcoa Aluminum to investigate the possibility that the aluminum pieces might be punch-outs from terrestrial machining operations, since they were measured in common terrestrial quarter-inch and inch sizes. However, after receiving some samples and testing them, an Alcoa Aluminum engineer told me that the purity of the aluminum at 99% plus was not typical of industrial machining, which usually involves harder alloys. Eventually, I learned from a retired S4 Area 51 physicist that the UFO's aluminum had iridium atoms intelligently placed at the atomic level of the pure aluminum pieces, which is something human science cannot yet do. So there was speculation that if the South Carolina Army Sergeant's story were true, the military handlers might have had aluminum samples from the alleged extraterrestrial craft punched out to distribute to American scientists for confidential study. Over 3 months, from April 10, 1996 to July 5, 1996, Art Bell and I received five typed letters. Some were 3 pages, some 2 pages, some 1. You can see all of them listed in a drop-down index by date at my earthfiles.com website, where there is a link now to the letter archive that we just put up on the headlines page at www.earthfiles.com. UFOLETTERS, earthfiles.com/UFO letters. According to the grandson, his grandfather told him this alleged extraterrestrial layered metal came from the bottom of a wedge-shaped craft, perhaps triangular, perhaps like the heel of a shoe, it's not clear, but that it crashed in the late 1940s between Sierra Blanca and the San Mateo Mountains, not far from the White Sands Trinity site and west of Roswell, New Mexico. In fact, according to the Army Sergeant Grandson's last letter to Art Bell and me on July 5, 1996, the grandfather wrote this about the half dozen silver layered metal pieces. Quote, samples of layered metals extracted by the grandfather from a wedge-shaped craft not far from the White Sands Trinity site, radiated light for a full 3 hours. The metals originally were on the central underside of a wedge-shaped disk. Speculate some type of shielding to enable craft and crew to survive accelerated entry into atmosphere when craft was experiencing uncontrolled descent. Pile of blackened ash was analyzed, and ash was confirmed of same elements of layering. Ash consisted of fibrous dust and residue. Ash and all debris swept into bagging, bags placed in tagged boxes, boxes placed into metal footlockers, initial examination off-site conducted at New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology. Secondary examinations at Los Alamos facility. Footlockers subsequently airlifted by courier to Wright Field, Ohio. Close quote. I contacted a professor in a large Midwestern university who wanted anonymity, but was interested in using powerful scanning electron microscope technology to provide analysis of what are called UFO implants, allegedly inserted into some people after encounters with non-human-looking entities, where the human says they end up inside a UFO, being examined by biological aliens and or artificial intelligence robots, before finding themselves suddenly back home with a few hours of missing time. Art Bell mailed to the professor 2 layered metal pieces for analysis. The professor's first step was to photograph the 2 layered metal pieces as they arrived in his university laboratory. He placed the dark side up of one piece on the left, labeled black bismuth, and then on the right, the silver magnesium side up, both next to a quarter coin that is about an inch in diameter for size comparison. After using energy dispersive spectroscopy, or EDS, to find out what the shiny silver side and the black side of the layered metal were made of, on June 8, 1996, the professor sent us his first report about the layered metal from the wedge-shaped UFO. The professor wrote, quote, "Energy dispersive spectroscopy EDS revealed that the shiny side contained more than 95% magnesium, a small amount, 2-3% of zinc. The whole material appears to represent layers consisting mainly of magnesium and a small amount of zinc, separated by thin layers containing a high bismuth content." Close quote. Next, here is the EDS energy dispersive spectroscopy results for the dark side skin of the layered metal, which showed primarily bismuth, magnesium, and a little zinc. In addition to the unfamiliar combination of bismuth and magnesium and zinc, there were questions about the isotope ratios in the magnesium. The professor used a scanning electron microscope, or SEM, set in a backscattering configuration so that heavier elements show up brighter. Therefore, the dark black bismuth appears as thin white lines, and the much lighter magnesium zinc shows as darker shades of gray and black. The SEM is set to a backscattering configuration so that heavier elements show up brighter, and the thin bismuth layers appear white. The professor measured the layers and found that the thin wavy lines of bismuth varied from 1 to 4 microns. For example, a human blood cell is about 5 microns in diameter. The magnesium zinc varied from 100 to 200 microns, about the diameter of a human hair, which is about 100 microns. One scientist thought the waviness in the layers might be a fractal wave pattern calculated in the layered material's construction, perhaps to better resonate with a specific frequency, or the waviness might be the result of heat absorbed in the metal's production or function. In summary, the metal fragments allegedly from the central underside of a wedge-shaped spacecraft found in New Mexico have some 26 alternating layers. One exotic metals manufacturer in New Jersey that I first called in 1996 said bluntly, quote, "No one layers bismuth and magnesium. It can't be done. The layers won't bond with each other," close quote. Well, so what is bismuth? Bismuth is a hard, brittle, metallic element that is grayish-white with a tinge of red. Pepto-Bismol is pink because it has bismuth in it. Bismuth's atomic number on the periodic table of elements is 83. Lead is 82. So bismuth is heavier than lead. Bismuth is a hard, brittle, metallic element that is grayish-white with a tinge of red. And the in current chemistry and physics books, you learn, just a moment, I had my script stuck. Bismuth is a hard, brittle, metallic element that is grayish-white with a tinge of red. Pepto-Bismol is pink because it has bismuth in it. Bismuth's atomic number on the periodic table of elements is 83. Lead is 82. So bismuth is heavier than lead. And in current chemistry and physics books, you learn that bismuth, shown here as a natural crystal, can be a coolant for nuclear power reactors and is not harmed by hydrochloric acid. Bismuth is also the most diamagnetic of the elements, meaning it resists penetration by magnetic fields more strongly than any other element. Magnetic field lines tend to be displaced around bismuth rather than passing through it. Bismuth also has the greatest Hall effect. That means if a voltage is placed on bismuth while the metal is in a magnetic field, a current flow will be induced that is 90 degrees to the voltage. Bismuth is also an efficient absorber of infrared energy. Modern researchers are experimenting with bismuth coatings that will convert heat to electricity. Bismuth is also added to metal mixtures in superconducting research. In addition to the unfamiliar combination of bismuth and magnesium zinc, there were questions about the isotope ratios in the magnesium. Isotope refers to the number of protons and neutrons in the nucleus of each atom. For example, magnesium on Earth is made up of about 80% 24 magnesium, or magnesium 24. That means there are 12 protons and 12 neutrons at the center of each 24 magnesium atom. The other 20% is equally divided between magnesium 25, which has one additional neutron compared to magnesium 24. There are two additional neutrons in magnesium 26 compared to 24 meg. If the layered metal were truly extraterrestrial in origin, some wondered if anomalies might be detected in those ratios or percentages of isotopes. And that question led me to this huge ion microprobe at the Carnegie Institution of Washington, D.C., that could analyze magnesium isotopes. After discussions with Dr. Eric Howery, shown here in the Department of Terrestrial Magnetism, he agreed to analyze the layered bismuth magnesium metal. I was living in Philadelphia at the time, so it was a car trip south to Washington, D.C., on July 20th, 1996. With one of the layered bismuth magnesium metals that Art Bell had sent me to do research that is inside this cage. One anomaly that Dr. Howery found was, quote, "The bismuth magnesium sample gave count rates of magnesium positive ions, which were enhanced 60 times more than in the pure magnesium metal being used for standard comparison." Why would the alleged bismuth magnesium layered metal from a crashed UFO in the late 1940s emit magnesium positive plus ions. It, quote, enhanced 60 times more than in the pure magnesium metal standard, close quote. Further, this graphic summary shows layered metal in the large dotted line compared to pure magnesium metal standard in the solid line for 26 magnesium isotope. The layered metal's red dotted line ended up showing that it had about 11% more magnesium-26 than the control magnesium metal standard. I kept reporting my research findings on Coast to Coast AM and Dreamland and asked if any listeners might have insider information about the construction and or function of the layered bismuth magnesium. I also contacted dozens of people in the scientific and industrial community to see if I could find anyone who had worked with bismuth and magnesium zinc layered together in the alternating and wavy micron thicknesses. My inquiries ranged from the Director of Material Sciences at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, to the National Science Foundation, to metallurgists at Sandia National Laboratory in Albuquerque, New Mexico, to aerospace and exotic metals manufacturers, to military labs, and to intelligence agencies. But no one had any knowledge, or at least told me they did, of such layered metal material. Until a man called me who said he had worked on back engineering technology retrieved from the Soviet Union and other sources during the Cold War in the 1970s. He said metal made out of bismuth and magnesium layers came into a lab at Edwards Air Force Base, California, as an unknown and left as an unknown. He told me later he learned the material might, quote, turn into a lifting body if placed in a million-volt electrostatic field augmented by an unspecified frequency of a Class C radio frequency signal, close quote. Physicist Travis Taylor at the Army's Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, Alabama, volunteered to do a literature search in scientific and military channels to see if he could find any references to bismuth and magnesium in thin micron layers. After several weeks, he reported to me, quote, I have basically exhausted every resource that I have ever tried to use in the past from about 1940 to now. I have found no reference, even in government research, for bismuth magnesium layers. This material just didn't make itself. It had to come from somewhere. In science, we do some research, and then we tell everyone about it. And nobody has told anyone about this material. Close quote. And I will repeat one more time. From Eric Howery, PhD, Ion Microprobe Tech, Carnegie Institution of Washington, D.C., to me on July 20th of 1996, because God bless him and rest him, he transitioned too soon. He was great. We worked, I think, 7 or 8 hours on that piece. And he's the one who said, quote, that bismuth magnesium sample gave count rates of positive magnesium ions, which were enhanced 60 times more than in the pure magnesium and metal standard. Close quote. And I still remember that day. We started early in the morning and it was in the afternoon. And what he was so puzzled by, and he kept running tests, was that 60 times more pure magnesium of positive ions in that pure magnesium metal standard. He thought it was highly unusual. And on that note, I know that Ian in the England is standing by. Ian, are you there? He has an announcement.
Yes, I am, Linda. I'm here.
Yeah, you have an announcement.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that we've been watching the channel dashboard. The channel analytics say that we're just 74 subscribers short of 264,000 subscribers. So let's remind everyone that they can subscribe and also to like us as well.
That's great. I'm now holding you like a yellow grapefruit, hoping that our audio won't disconnect and that everything will be closer, and that I thank everybody here and around the world, that it means a lot to do this work when it is classified reality by the government and the nation that you live in, when it is actual reality, and that I feel that it is important to keep trying to share with all of you as much as I can that I feel is either evidentiary or firsthand testimony, and that I get so many letters and sometimes phone calls and proton mails from a lot of you who are working in sensitive positions. And when you say, Linda, keep doing what you're doing, it helps give me the energy. And I thank you. And on that note, Ian, what is the first comment or question?
I've got quite a few comments here tonight. The chat's been quite active. We've got Don K. Johnson, who is a frequent contributor to our chat. Says, didn't Linda go on the radio with the guy who mailed you the parts? Didn't you talk to him once on Art's show on July the 3rd, 1996? Can we clear that up, please?
Which park?
On, well, the guy who mailed the parts originally, did he actually talk to you directly on Art's show?
Oh.
And we've got the date, July the 3rd, 1996.
Yes, I misunderstood the English accent. Yes, I got a call from him. It was at the time of the fifth letter. And that came in July. The fifth letter was July 5th. And I was in, at that point, I think I was, I'm not sure where I was, but I remember just picking up the phone and there was this voice and he said, I can't talk long. I'm going to Iraq. I'm on the way. I don't know if I will come back. I remember it was just like that at the beginning. And he said, and I'm the one who sent you the letters. And he said, if I can, I will try to send you more. And he said, I still am going through some of my grandfather's material. And that was, I think he made one more sentence or two about the fact that I think he wanted to stress with me, this is real. This is my grandfather. This is what he did, and ETs and UFOs and all of it is real, and don't give up. And it was short, and he left off, and I really hoped that I would hear from him again, but none of us know what happened to him in Iraq. So yes, I got to talk with him, and he was giving me some information, and the big thing was that in the context of somebody going off to a military assignment in Iraq who is calling and says, essentially, I'm telling you everything I've sent you is true. It really meant a lot. Go ahead, Ian.
Okay. Yeah, Linda, right. We've got some UAP Society did send me a question, well, a comment from last week's show, which says the U.S. recovered intact and partially intact craft of non-human origin. That's a quote directly from David Grush, and this would seem to indicate that there are parts of craft, and this would seem to back up what Dave Grush was saying last year.
Let me insert here another discussion with a person that I cannot name. A sparkly, a person in a world where if I gave the name, you would know. But they sought me out because they wanted to talk to me about their own UFO sighting, which partly they have not reported about, but they told me this. They knew Jackie Gleason, and they this whole scene with them is in that era of when Nixon and Jackie Gleason, Nixon was in an administration, and we've all heard about the, sometimes it's called a rumor, sometimes it's called an alleged, I think it happened, because that's what these people told me, that Nixon agreed to take his friend, Jackie Gleason, a star, to where Jackie Gleason had sort of begged, I guess, been very emotional with Nixon about, please arrange it so that I can go and see the underground tubes that have ETs in them and the craft that are stored. And that Jackie Gleason allegedly had some details. And that this person said, and Linda, it really did happen. And he said, this is the part that Jackie Gleason couldn't get over. This is now a quote to me about Jackie Gleason. That Jackie Gleason had told the people talking to me that he was absolutely amazed that the government of the United States had this big underground installation. It was, he said, under Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, and that there were tubes mounted on some rooms with some kind of liquid or preservation, and in them were different ETs. And unfortunately, Jackie Gleason either didn't ask or it never came up, because I asked them, was it all the same? Were they all grays or were there mixed ones? And the person talking to me said, I only know about the gray inside of one of the tubes personally. But he said, I would assume that there were others. So all of that is supporting that story that everybody said that it was in the rags in the supermarkets, and therefore it couldn't be true. And I'm here to tell you, in the discussion that I had with the people that I had, I think that that anybody who can look in to Eglin Air Force Base having a large underground facility that has beings mounted in tubes of liquid, if they can learn anything more, try. And I sure would like to know if you learn more. Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, there's still speculation as well about the actual material composition itself. Brian Lau says, element 115 is circulated through the layers to create anti-gravity. And people are speculating as well that it's does this have some connection as well with the dragonfly drones and self-activated devices that you reported on a while back?
The one thing it does have to do is Bob Lazar talking to me and others so much back at the end of the 80s about his being literally asked, or that he asked through maybe Los Alamos to get some work, at least temporarily, in the S4 Area 51 area to work on UFO stuff. And that the element 115 was the first person who reported that they had any information about it at all was Bob Lazar. Now, element 115 has come up in other discussions, but the problem that I have is that everybody who does science investigations and doesn't share whatever their root is, whatever the evidentiary material they have, it becomes like, oh, well, they're talking about element 115 because Bob Lazar talked about it. And the reference that you are making, Ian, do you have any more context that you can give me for consideration?
I don't on that one, but people have also been talking in the comments to the show, as well as the chat, about whether or not high-tech aliens are far past using metal I'm thinking 3D printing, also some reports where UFO craft are grown, and also some of a crystalline structure.
And what you're saying, they're implying that Element 115 would be somehow involved in those?
No, I think the implication is, with that other contributor there in the chat, is that element 115 is most likely used with in conjunction with this material that you've actually...
Oh, the bismuth magnesium.
Yeah, that's it, yes. That's
because I think it is true. Again, I try not to overemphasize what I don't have documents in firsthand evidentiary, but ever since we got those five letters, and I was on the air all the time doing research for quite a while, one of the things that has always stuck in my mind were people who said, we know that the bismuth magnesium in a certain field will turn it into a lifting body. That somehow it was that combination of the bismuth and the magnesium and the zinc, especially the bismuth and the magnesium in those layers, that made a skin. And that really came home to roost in 2014. And that was the short version, because I've mentioned this before, but it's very important to bring it up here. In 2014, all of that initial with Bob Lazar and Area 51 and his being hired or whatever the situation was, that I get a communication from a physicist who showed me ID badges. He showed me a lot. That this is him, his photograph, all of the stuff that when you have real government lab passes, that's what you get. And it was at a conference. And the people who choose to wait out all of the questioners to me at conferences often are people who do seem to have military or intel either backgrounds or are currently working. And it's a nice way to do it because I'm getting signals like, meet you at the back of the room. And that's what happened with this particular individual. And we must have talked for an hour or two. And the whole thing was, he had heard my reports on Coast to Coast AM and Dreamland when Art and I were receiving these letters, and he'd asked me to investigate, and I was bringing all of the fresh investigations each week. So all of the material generally that I shared with you tonight, this man already knew in spades. And when we were seated in a shadowy corner area, he said that he wanted me to know that Bob Lazar had worked and that the Element 115 was a player, and that the bismuth magnesium layering was part of where you have lift, that it is something that is essentially a physics of rapid lift when you're on a gravitational body, and a whole bunch of other things. But I like this when we move into subjects and then there are people with other pieces that reinforce that we're talking about real subjects, and our government knows they are real subjects. It's just that they have stamped, classified on everything, and I think it's not right. I think it's not fair. I think that we as humans on the planet, in spite of trillionaires and territory, that we deserve to know everything, the bad as well as the good. Okay, Ian. I'm holding up your yellow grapefruit to hear if you're having a hard time. Sometimes his signal drops out and we don't know why.
It's okay, I'm here, Linda.
Now here he is.
Okay, just need a clarification as well. I think that it's probably a quote from Eric Davis that the multi-layered bismuth magnesium sample, the bismuth layers are less than a human hair, and magnesium samples about 10 times the size of a human hair. And that although some attempts were made to reproduce it, it couldn't be, they couldn't get the bismuth and magnesium layers to bond. Is that still the case?
That's right.
Today's technology.
The delamination is what it's called. The delamination by layers is something that happens if we're trying to work with it. Clearly, because the pieces exist and somebody had to make them, they are not a Hollywood prop, the bismuth, magnesium, zinc layered pieces. There were six that were sent to Art Bell. And another interesting point is, and it may have been that phone call at some point, because in reading back of the letters, I didn't find these sentences. So I think it was when he called me out of the blue. And I think I asked him a question. How did your grandfather get those six bismuth magnesium pieces? And to my surprise, the grandson said, they had been in a ring, a security ring around this UFO crash for all night. And it was getting close to sunup. It was still dark. And he said, my grandfather told me he just walked over to where it had been glowing for 3 hours. There was glowing light from all this. He stressed that it was glowing from the bismuth, magnesium, zinc pieces that were sort of like feathers on the bottom, and that the grandfather just reached under and took a hold of whatever he felt and pulled, and that some of them broke off in his hands. Whether that's true, that was, as I recall, that was what the grandson told me in that phone call. And it may be why there were only six pieces. I don't know, because the grandson was never specific about whether he kept any or all or a same number. And I hope he did not die in Iraq. And if he is listening tonight, I would love to hear from you in whatever way you think is safe, and to tell me more in detail, if you can, about what the grandfather told you, how he specifically got those bismuth magnesium pieces layered from the bottom of a wedge-shaped craft by pulling on something or pulling on them individually. That's what I don't know. Go ahead, Ian.
Yeah, just one final thing as well on the clarification from Eric Davis's statements. I think he says as well, this is a quote that I got from him, that says, it turns out exactly this combination of materials at exactly those dimensions turn out to be an excellent microscopic waveguide for very high frequency electromagnetic radiation terahertz frequencies.
Yes. Oh, yes. They're definitely in. I have a file about the terahertz frequencies interacting with the bismuth magnesium material. I just had to decide for tonight, after the letters, of concentrating on the major research. But there were times, even having to do with John Burroughs in 1980 at Bentwaters, because terahertz frequencies were definitely discussed. They were part of the scientific and investigation of the Bentwaters, December 26th to 28th, 1980. And terahertz frequencies are a really major subject when you get into high advanced technology. And the problem there is that a lot of information is squashed or is kept classified. And so some people will talk about their knowledge of terahertz frequencies being applied to the whole gamut of UFO technologies, and others won't. And we're always fighting to keep open truth. And the more you can help, please do. If you're out there and you have information as being a scientist and you know about the terahertz frequency link to the bismuth magnesium zinc layered material in terms of turning into a lifting body, I would love to hear that. And I know that the physicist that I talked to in 2014 at that conference, he definitely talked to me a lot about terahertz frequency being the key to the bismuth magnesium layered material that he had worked with. So clearly things crash or they're shot down and the government doesn't tell us, but that there are a lot and then pieces get carved up or however they do it and go off to a lot of different labs who are signed non-disclosure up the kazoo. And that's why we get snippets, snippets over how many years? Many decades. All right, Ian, we're at the bottom of this hour, but I wonder if there's one comment or question that you feel would be important to tag here.
There's so many comments and questions, but I do quickly want to acknowledge our generous audience with the super chats this evening.
Thank you.
So let's just do these now. Yeah. Stephen Adamski, Mike Basil, Diane Miller, Cindy Vol, and we've got Goldie Olvido Baroa again joined us from the Philippines, and also thanks to Moonbird as well.
Yes, to everybody, I really truly appreciate your support in every way. And wonder, Ian, if there is one comment or question that you think would be important to go into right now.
Okay, I'm just going to quickly scan through these. By the way, it's Spartacus is with us in the chat. It's Spartacus's birthday. Happy birthday, Spartacus.
What's the number?
Just Spartacus. We've just got Spartacus in the chat, and I don't know his which his birthday numbers, how many revolutions around the
circle. Okay.
But he says it's a good way to celebrate his birthday with us today. Okay, Linda, we've got some people who are saying love to you, Linda. Thank you for all that you do. This is from UFO U. It says, I was abducted as a kid and can't wait to live in a world where there is no longer taboo. And on that subject about the taboo, Linda, do you believe that there are more extraterrestrials, and could it be more extra or ultra-dimensional or all of the above?
All of the above. There are biologicals. There are 100% artificial intelligence. There are combinations of those two that would be in the cyborg category. There is a wide range of biological ETs. I have no question about that. But I do agree 100%. There is a dimensional aspect to all of this. And that when you take some of what I've been exposed to, that included that beings like the Tall Whites can go 55 light years in seconds. That was a quote. Because they know how to be in this third dimensional universe. And they know how to leave the third dimension, go into another dimension outside, and then do a cushion shot like on a pool table, and be 100 light years in this universe. And something in me seems to, I just inherently know that that is true. And I find it exciting that if we could start opening up all of these technologies and introduce the ETs that are friendly and supportive through the fantastic science of physics and other dimensions and other dimensional beings. So then other dimensional beings, that doesn't sound so mystical. It means we're in a universe of universes and dimensions. And that's the way it works, a multifaceted consciousness gestalt, and that our being in the third dimension, we just are having one taste, one phase of all the possible realities. And it may be absolutely true that it is the soul that we neither see nor feel in a matter world, but it may be the souls of the beings in the third dimension that have some exquisite relationship to the other dimensions, and that there are beings who want to experience that. And there is something about the focus on the unseen soul that has been a part of my investigation from the very beginning, going back to animal mutilations and ultimately meeting people who were investigating abductions, or they were reporting that when they were hypnotizing abductees, that they were always running into these themes about other dimensions, souls recycling in other dimensions, and then that beings, ETs, somehow get involved in those kinds of cycles. And the literature of all of the people who have written books, there are so many in which you can read different facets of this whole question. Are the concepts going for thousands of years on this planet having to do with the recycling of souls through bodies over time? Families of souls, enemies in souls, and that there is something about the quote by the Iben, allegedly at Los Alamos back in the 1940s, I believe, 1949, who came out of that UFO crash, having his face pulled down from where the security people were walking, and something took a hold of his face and pulled that army security guy down toward a patch, what looked like rocks. And when he got there, he could see something flashing inside of a crack in the rocks. And they pulled the rock away, and here was a gray being. Black eyes were what were reflecting. And the military guy got a huge download in his mind, telepathically, of what had happened, and showed the crash. And it implied that we did something that brought the craft down. And then that military person was assigned to go with that gray being to Los Alamos, where they were there for 4 or 5 years, and then the being died of unknown causes or some problem. But during that time, there are supposed to be recordings on film and probably any other medium, but film, that they were running film of that being telepathically communicating with that army security person for 3 or 4 years until its death of unknown causes, the ET. And that one of the questions and answers that allegedly took place that was sent to me in a letter, because I had talked about this in a television program, and I got a letter that said, one of the questions that the military man asked the gray being, are there souls? Are souls real? And the telepathic answer, clear, loud. Reincarnation, the recycling of souls, is the machinery of this universe. And I was given the sense that the way the tilt was on this universe is that how many universes are there? And is it possible that each universe has a different educational role, and that we are in the universe, as we've talked before, but I really think it's beginning to feel true, that the yin and the yang symbol sums up what goes on in this universe, because it is like a huge, huge university for souls. And always reach out and try to ally yourself with the thought that dwells in the light. I love you guys. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.